You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop.
Well, I gotta say, I might have fucked up because I took those mushrooms the other day and I started watching this and I went to sleep and I had these like wild dreams of my white privilege and, you know, I was looking for a communist manifesto and I even wanted to cross-dress. No, I haven't had that problem in years. I was a little disconcerting. And after I had found my high heels and my... gone out for a night in town. I felt a little guilty about it, and I'm ready to move on with the video. So,
Father managed to find his way back to Hungary. Had he remained in the camp, he would have arrived home much sooner. My father came home a changed man. His experiences during the Russian Revolution profoundly affected him.
So starting off, just to like bring it back, because it's the second episode, we're going to be listening from the Russian Revolution part. Because remember, his father in 1917 was locked away in a Russian prison camp for POW camp in Siberia. And another leader of another camp had been shot. And George Soros, Papa Soros, is like, I'm not sticking around here. I'm getting up out of here. And him and a couple buddies escape from prison. And he ends up getting... remind you, in 1917, what happened was the Russian Revolution. And so he gets sidetracked and has this Ulysses-like journey back to his homeland in Hungary, which is where my family's from. Same area, Polish extraction.
My father managed to find his way back to Hungary. Had he remained in the camp, he would have arrived home much sooner. My father came home a changed man. His experiences during the Russian Revolution profoundly affected him.
Okay, notice he clears his throat. Yeah. Whenever he talks about his father and when he talks about World War II, he has this like cleared throat and he looks around nervously. And mind you, he's speaking in a second language. He's a naturally probably a German or Czech speaker, probably German. But that's his first language. Now that's a very similar language. So he's very composed here. And then all of a sudden, he's like,
he lost his ambition and wanted nothing more from life than to enjoy it. He imparted to his children values that were very different from those of the milieu in which we lived.
And here's this story. He talks about his father's client. And he says they were going on a skiing holiday and he was going to get some extra money. George goes and borrows some money from his father's business partner. And his father's like, oh shit, I'm gonna have to work.
Although we were reasonably prosperous, we were not the typical bourgeois family, and we were proud of being different. In 1944, when the Germans occupied Hungary, my father immediately realized that these were not normal times.
And he talks about his dad's a cheapskate. He said he only worked for as much money as they needed
to pay it back. Although we were reasonably prosperous, we were not the typical bourgeois family, and we were proud of...
Mind you, okay, so after World War II, the Soviet tanks rush in, and they put they basically put a communist government in power. There's the Berlin or the Iron Curtain, and all of Eastern Europe is communist.
Being different. In 1944, when the Germans occupied Hungary, my father immediately realized that these were not normal times, and the normal rules didn't apply.
And, you know, I don't think the new academics even understand this part of history, how crazy this was. But Stalin, basically, wherever his line went and laid at 1945 in, I think, May of 1945, when it was May 7th, actually, VE Day.
He arranged false identities for his family and a number of other people. Those who could paid. Others he helped for free. Most of them survived. That was his finest hour.
They're like, oh, well, this is where, I guess we're just going to occupy all of this, and we're going to keep it. And we're going to create little vassal communist states. Now, George Soros would have been living from 1945 to 1951 in a place, I have a little dog sitting here. She might jog the cord plugged into the camera, so. But, okay, so that's 6 years that he's in communist Hungary.
Living with false identity turned out to be an exhilarating experience for me too. We were in mortal danger. People perished all around us, but we managed not only to survive, but to help other people. We were on the side of the angels, and we triumphed against overwhelming odds.
Or I think it might have been Austria, but he says it anyway. But it's Prague, so no, that would be Czechoslovakia. And he eventually gets to go to London School of Economics. Now, remember, his dad didn't have any money. The World War II just happened. Where do you get any money and also make it through the war? This is the big question with George Soros, and this is why. There was a movie called The Inside Man where there was a, it was like a prominent banker, and this setup of the movie is that this guy is robbing this bank, and he's actually hiding in the bank. It's a spoiler, but he doesn't want any of the money in the bank. That's all a ruse. What he wants is this lockbox that's got some Nazi paraphernalia and pictures from basically taking George Soros's life story and superimposing it on a Hollywood story. Because, and mind you, that was put out by Hollywood, probably with some direction from the, it's interesting to see just, it's not a big secret that CIA puts out propaganda. It's like, people wanted this to get out. And my theory on this is that both the KGB and our intelligence services would know about George Soros' activities in World War II. The KGB, when they rolled in, the, you know, Gestapo and all these different, the Waffen-SS and all these, you know, they tried to destroy records. And the KGB was already kind of implanted. They've been actually spying. They had a whole spy apparatus already working in some of these conquered areas. Because the Nazis weren't home. It was in Germany, their efficiency was cold. And their efficiency was cold with it everywhere else. But the KGB basically inherited their files and then also was spying at the same time as the Gestapo and all the other state apparatuses of the Nazi National Socialist State.
This made me feel very special. It was high adventure. I had a reliable guide in my father and came through unscathed. What more could a 14-year-old ask for? After the euphoric experience of escaping the Nazis, life in Hungary started to lose its luster during the Soviet occupation.
Now, so here's the thing about George Soros. He's just let to go off and go to the West from a communist country. And I still have my grandmother's passport from this time. And mind you, my father was born on a U.S. Air Force base in Germany. So he's a dual citizen. So Point being that this was a passport meant to travel around Europe for a service member, and it excluded all Warsaw Pact states. You could not use a passport. It was a State Department like embargo, and I think we should do the same thing with China nowadays, which is we just don't deal with these countries. If you're a communist country, we got nothing for you. We have to take our shit back, and we just none of our people can go there. Because they are insidious and they are constantly trying underhanded to ruin our discourse and our civil life and our civil liberties. That being said, it's like, how did George Soros get the money to go to London School of Economics? Number two, how did he get the clearance to leave a Warsaw Pact country, from the KGB, all these people, and, you know, when he would be a perfect spy for the KGB. And if he was doing anything untoward in World War II, they would know about it and probably use it to blackmail him into doing whatever he wanted.
I was looking for new challenges, and with the help of my father, I found my way out of Hungary. When I was 17, I became a student in London. In my studies, my primary interest was to gain a better understanding of the strange world into which I had been born. But I have to confess, I also harbored some fantasies of becoming an important philosopher.
And I always says, some people paid, some people could. Now, you know what my theory is on that, and I mean, I think that's kind of the prevailing theory, but that's such a macabre a possibility or outcome. So I understand why he would be, you know, if it wasn't true, it would be horrible to hear, but we just know the man's, his actions and what he's about. And we know the context of his story and what he's saying his story is and what we know the evidence is, evidence of it is. And so I feel bad accusing him of this or insinuating this. It's not, and because if it, like I said, if it's not true, that fucking sucks. That this is how people are interpreting your life because you were stuck in Prague. But the thing is, you know, there's not anybody coming out to say, you know, literally in the, that's the other part of this. Nobody, he said some did survive, some didn't. There's never like, oh yeah, I mean, nobody knows about this. Like, or I'm saying there's no corroboration in the Holocaust, the people who suffered from the Holocaust, the Jewish diaspora. Yeah, like I said, they basically disowned him as a Jew. Not many Jews are, you know, standing out. And because he's never involved in the Jewish community. So what is that? And he says, I'm not a typical bourgeois. We didn't come from a typical bourgeois family. My father's a changed man. That's what I hear, is my father was not religious anymore. And like I said, I have a personal purview into his mindset as a person who just, you know, came from a home with a fucked up a father who's mentally ill and addicted to drugs. So anyway, like I said, he clears his throat. And yeah, it's like, what the fuck?
And the normal rules didn't apply. He arranged false identities for his family and a number of other people. Those who could, paid. Others he helped for free. Most of them survived. That was his finest hour. Living with false identity turned out to be an exhilarating experience.
I mean, like I said, they had a Hollywood movie about it, and honestly, I think that was basically to dodge the censors, because he is very militant about his image, but I think he's just got so many people, because in his later years, he's gotten so crazy with his activism, I don't even think he's worried about his image anymore.
Living with false identity turned out to be an exhilarating experience for me too.
Yeah, that's kind of odd. He said living under false identity was exhilarating for me. Now, and I know what he's talking about. I'm sorry to keep relating this. I just feel this guy's, that's part of my perspective. That's why I'm doing this on YouTube. And that's why I sit there and think, well, maybe I should share this stuff. Because I do have a pretty fucking bonkers perspective on life. But it is pretty crazy to be running from the law. And it is exhilarating, but it's not all a good thing, dude. You know, you ain't getting good sleep. And you can't stay in the same place that much. You got to worry about people turning you in. I've ran on bad enough warrants to be going to prison. Like $100,000 bond when I got caught. So, but not like I'm going to be killed by the Nazis. That's not the time. That was exhilarating. And that's also lends to my supposition about, you know, his help, you know, his La Resistance period during the World War II is he was, you know, he saw it as a game even back then, because I assure you, Anne Frank, if she was with us, she would not saying, oh yeah, it was awesome. And mind you, how was she hiding? She wasn't walking around. He looks quite Jewish. Here's the thing. My my family looked Jewish from that area. There's a lot of people. There's a reason why a lot of people died in that area, because to Hitler, it wasn't just the Jews. It's Slavs, Jews, Gypsies. The Jews. I don't want to say Slavs as far as that was just that was the worst. But people like me. So. All this shit, and I know people would say, oh yeah, you look like, I'm blonde haired, blue eyed, to you, I look that way. If you were to see my family, my father, red hair, yeah, Europeans understand what other Europeans look like. So George Soros would be gun smoked. He wouldn't be walking around with a fucking ID.
We were in mortal danger. People perished all around us, but we managed not only to survive, but to help other people. We were on the side of the angels, and we triumphed against overwhelming odds. This made me feel very special. It was high adventure. I had a reliable guide in my father and came through unscathed. What more could a 14-year-old ask for?
And here he is, he's talking about his father, who apparently maybe knew how to forge IDs, because he's saying he's like he'd help people escape. But mind you, here, what did he tell us about his father? I hate to harp on this subject, but it's just like so many times on the left, they're willing to have a glaring hypocrisy or a hole in their knowledge about something and just sit there and just nod their head because either the person's financially or ideologically important to them, or they come from a protected class, as they'll just say.
After the euphoric experience of escaping the Nazis, life in Hungary started to lose its luster during the Soviet occupation.
I think it's so rich that he would say, he'd say, oh, life had lost its luster in Soviet Hungary. No shit. So that's what he wants to do. He's fallen into that thinking of, oh, real socialism's never been done. That's the type that we got. That is ridiculous. Because, I mean, just, and then also, the whole point of his philosophy is that he's the one who, it's all bent towards like working for him. It's a self-serving philosophy. If you actually look at it, like, it's all of you believe into this crap, but I'm gonna actually work in the world, because he's a billionaire who's like a stock trading whiz and currency exchanging whiz, real estate, everything. If you can make money off it, he did it. But what he does is like this militant, I would almost say it's almost like intelligence work, where you normally business, you find a supply and chain or a supply and demand like exploit where, okay, I can fill this need or whatever. He thinks the exact opposite, where it's this country or this organization has this weakness and I'm going to exploit it and collapse that. At least that's my understanding of it thus far.
I was looking for new challenges, and with the help of my father, I found my way out of Hungary. When I was 17, I became a student in London. In my studies, my primary interest was to gain a better understanding of the strange world into which I had been born. Living in London was a big letdown. I was without money, alone, and people were not interested in what I had to say.
But because there's so much, people are starting to talk about this stuff. Whereas on the mainstream media, there's a clip of somebody talking about it on Fox News. And I'm a little concerned about doing videos about this, honestly, because of that. That I'd start a channel and just get shut down right away. But I, you know, I'd imagine I'm going to get thrown off YouTube. And not because I'm lying or anything. I will cite my sources. Anyway.
I believed that I had gained insights that set me apart from other people. Living in London was a big letdown. I was without money, alone, and people were not interested in what I had to say. But I didn't abandon my philosophical ambitions, even when circumstances forced me to make a living in more mundane pursuits.
And that's common. And I, anybody who's a thinker of any magnitude has thought about communism or socialism, because in theory, it's a great idea. You figure out, and there are societies, there's two societies that I know that actually where it's worked, and that's the kibbutz in Israel and Scandinavia. And both of those places are culturally and ethnically homogenous, and they already have a good social contract, and they're small. And they're also like very advanced countries and also equal advanced.
So. But I didn't abandon my philosophical ambitions, even when circumstances forced me to make a living in more mundane pursuits. After completing my studies, I had a number of false starts.
Just like, you numbnuts. Like this person's a piece of crap. This is a piece of garbage, dude. And you're not answering any or asking any questions about this. So what he's saying is his dad basically created this smuggling operation, even though his dad, he says he's a changed man. And he says was not the typical bourgeois family. Mind you, he's a Jewish person in Prague. Now to say we weren't the typical bourgeois family, this means I'm not going to synagogue. That's how I take it, is that his father had come out of the Russian Revolution, and when he says he's a changed man, he was not a religious man, and he was probably a socialist.
Finally, I ended up as an arbitrage trader in New York, but in my free time, I continued to work on my philosophy. That's how I came to write my first major essay, entitled The Burden of Consciousness.
So this is why I said he has he's an anti-Christ-like figure, is that he has this false philosophy. He's like a false prophet. He sees himself as a false prophet. And really what he's achieved is acculturating Marxism for the Western world. That's what he's done.
It was an attempt to model a Popper's framework of open and closed societies. It linked organic society with a traditional mode of thinking, closed society with a dogmatic mode, and open society with a critical mode.
And, if you're looking for a good philosophy for humanity, just be universalist. that whatever it is, it can be applied in all walks of life, in all countries, whatever it is. And that's kind of like the Commonwealth or equality of, I'm just going to judge you two by your actions. That's the problem with intersectionalities. It's just everything is, contradictory. Is that, I'd love to help this person, but I can't because this, or whatever, a lot of the most productive members of society, if you were to just go by the perceived victims, you would be starving out the most productive members of society.
What I could not properly resolve was the nature of the relationship between the mode of thinking and the actual state of affairs. That problem continued to preoccupy me, and that's how I came to develop the concept of reflexivity.
And he's going to tell about his big investment strategy, and it's basically kind of like Sun Tzu, Art of War. So it's a little, it's very interesting stuff, actually. Because what he would do, known as the man who collapsed the London, what is it? I think it's the Bank of England. There's a rush on the pound had some type of price problem. And this is back in the 80s, and he swooped in and basically shorted the pound. And I think they had to devalue their currency or something to pay off some debt. Whereas the pound was always held against the dollar at like 1.25 rate of the dollar. So the pound sterling note was always worth more than the US dollar. So for them to knock off that trade, because they just basically, here's a US dollar, we're right over top. And the pound basically does that today. The trade balance has always been kind of that you basically buy into a British pound with more dollars. Like they're one of the currencies that actually is more pricey. So for George Soros to actually caused such a, like, they literally say he broke the Bank of England. And this was actually, I believe it was 1990 something. But he'd already made vast amounts of cash by then.
I could choose my own tutor, and I chose Karl Popper, whose book, The Open Society and Its Enemies, had made a profound impression on me. In his books, Popper argued that the empirical truth can't be known with absolute certainty. Even scientific laws can't be verified beyond the shadow of a doubt.
So this is why I said he's an antichrist-like figure, is that he has this false philosophy. He's like a false prophet. He sees himself as a false prophet. And really what he's achieved is acculturating Marxism for the Western world. That's what he's done and in his critical theories. But we'll talk some more.
They can only be falsified by testing. One failed test is enough to falsify, but no amount of confirming instances is sufficient to verify, a concept I shall explore in greater detail a little later. It so happened that the concept of reflexivity provided me with a new way of looking at financial markets, a better way than the prevailing theory.
Okay, so now I'm starting to understand a little bit more, because I had read a little bit about it before, just because I was like, who the hell is George Soros? This was a couple years ago. I think the first time I'd heard about him was actually the mid-2010s, and he knew he was a big Democratic donor, but I didn't realize, because at that point, his spending wasn't as crazy. What he was trying to do, he was just really starting to step into high gear, because he's getting old, so I think he's trying to see what effect he can with his money, and he has like $9 billion, but...
Living in London was a big letdown. I was without money, alone, and people were not interested in what I had to say.
But, okay, so what it says is the, like, reflexivity is basically saying there's a circle causality. And in the market, that's the economic activity. Traders see that, and traders, I mean all citizens, see that economic activity, and it affects their perceptions. And their perceptions, in effect, influence the economic activity, which, yeah, that actually pans out. That's not a bad theory of reflexivity, but what...
After completing my studies, I had a number of false starts. Finally, I ended up as an arbitrage trader in New York. But in my free time, I continued to work on my philosophy.
George Soros does with that, or what can be done with that. So if you believe perceptions form economic reality, what does that make you, what, how can you affect people's perceptions? Propaganda. Or, and this is where the migrant trains and creating false manufactured crises is that, and also I'm sure he made a killing during the 2020 realignment or wealth transfer is what they call it. But your perceptions with Wuhan, you know, people in hazmat suits and all this. And I remember watching that thinking, bah! I mean, it was like, what the F? You know, it looked like the end of the world in 2020. That's going to affect the market outcome, yada, yada, yada. So, and you, if you were just, and this is what I've always said about the COOF, is that if the TV or if the propaganda box was just turned off, you wouldn't even notice. I remember I was in a hospital. I had overdosed on heroin, fentanyl-laced heroin, of course, since it was made in Mexico, and all of that has Chinese fentanyl in it. This is at the beginning of 2020. It's a little segue, but the hospital was empty. And I would turn on the TV and see hospitals, like, full with people. And when I asked them about it, they're like, oh, yeah, we're ready for... this big surge that's about to happen. Well, the hospital capacities never really got over like 40 to 50% where I'm at. I live in a healthy area. I live in Denver. But it's like, you know, it's like I said, why I call it nihilism is it's, you just don't believe there's any fundamentals to anything. If it's all perception, then you just need to change people's perception, right? Right? That's where you get that. Or the other thing is, modern economic theory is that the fundamentals don't matter. It's what people believe, which is absolutely horseshit, because there's energy. The part that it doesn't acknowledge, and I'll try to wrap this up because I need to get back to it, is that there's energy expended. There's actual, like, tangible aspect, or there's tangible, durable goods that are being transferred. So it's not just my perception that if I give you $5 million worth of lumber, it's not my perception that I lost that lumber. I actually lost that lumber. I lost the time that, and the labor and the life force in the food that went into people's bellies as they're harvesting that lumber, all that shit. So it's just, that's just perception. That's not real. That's perception lumber. That's not the real lumber. Yeah, right, George.
Professionals, if Dr. Fauci, if the doctors tell us that we should take it, I'll be the first in line to take it. Absolutely. But if Donald Trump tells us that we should take it, I'm not taking it.
But I have to confess, I also harbored some fantasies of becoming an important philosopher. From other people.